continue with our study on the 1 Samuel. I don't know, it's been a great blessing to me. But if somebody's going to come and tell your life story, what would they say? How would they write about it? They will write about the good stuff, about the bad stuff, as well as about the ugly stuff. In life, sometimes we try to hide the ugly stuff just because we don't want people to see it. It will just bring shame and embarrassment. But when you read the Bible, it's fascinating that it just writes the good, the bad, and the ugly. And there are things for us. It's written for our edification. It's written for us to learn things from the characters that are in the Bible. The title that I put for this sermon, it's very hard to put a sermon for, a title for the whole chapter, chapter 19 of the book of 1 Samuel, but I felt it really talks about disobedience to God always brings consequences. It's so true, and it was Augustine who said, the cost of disobedience is small compared with the cost of disobedience. There's always a cost attached. Sometimes we don't feel it now, but we do feel it down the line in life. And the story that is just in front of us is a direct result of disobedience. You know, and it starts with the life of a king. In order for me to read to you chapter 19, it's fascinating. There's so much happening. But I want to just remind you of what happened in chapter 18. Actually, in chapter 17, you've got the story of David and Goliath, right? You all know that story. The little man kills the big man and wins, and everybody's happy. The cheer group comes, the cheerleading group comes and starts singing songs, you know. Hey, 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 Saul killed the thousands and David killed the 10,000s. Well, it doesn't go like that, but something like that. You know, everybody's just happy. But, you know, the only person who's not happy is really the king, because he's got issues. You know, because now somebody, a young man, is getting all the credit that he should be getting it as a king. And jealousy does crazy things in life. Have you ever met jealous people? Jealous people are never happy. They're always looking for more. They are miserable when they see other people are happy. We all have certain types of jealousies within our lives. Even though we don't verbalize it, it's there because that's human nature. That's the sinful nature that we must always suppress. And always remind ourselves, you know, why am I feeling so jealous about somebody doing so well? You know, it's human nature. I think there's good jealousy. There's excellent jealousy. Like a husband should be jealous of their wife. The wife should be jealous of their husband. God is a jealous God. He wants us to worship him versus worship any other God. So these are healthy types of jealousies. But there's also the unhealthy jealousy that just destroys you from inside. And eventually, what it does, it creates a problem not only for you, but those who are around you as well. Usually, sin in somebody's life does not only affect them, but it affects the people around them. And it's very important in life to deal with sin. Some sins are bigger than others, but sin is sin in the presence of God. We always have to come clean and clear. And we all know what they are. Sometimes the Lord reminds us of what they are. Now, in the life of Saul, he just wanted to get all the attention, even more than God was getting. You know, he wanted to get all the glory. And then when people came and start praising David, I mean, David was not after glory. He just wanted to stand up for what was right and kill the giant because he was blaspheming God's army and God's people. And God gave him the power and the strength to do what was right. And a lot of people paid attention to that 14-year-old boy, and then eventually Saul is jealous. And jealousy, if it's not treated, it will make you not only hate, but also kill. So from that very moment, as the story continues, at the end of chapter 18, when Saul realized that the Lord was with David and how much his daughter Michal loved him, Saul became even more afraid of him. And he remained David's enemy for the rest of his life. So he really made David, who protected him, who saved Israel, he became a bigger enemy than his real enemy, the Philistines. Now, what he also did in chapter 18, it's fascinating, because he wanted to find ways to kill David. And he wanted to play the role of the puppeteer, you know, asking other people to do his dirty work. So one of the schemes that he came with, he says, you know, let's send David to kill the Philistines, and you know, and he knew that these battles were hard to win. But for some reason, when David went there, God gave him the strength and the power, and he won all these battles. When he came back, it just didn't work. And eventually, he realized that his daughter, not the eldest, but Michal, she was in love with David. And he even used his daughter. He says, all right, he went to his army commander. He says, go and tell David this. He says, go and tell David that I will give my daughter to you if you go and kill 100 Philistines. Boy, thinking that, 100 of them are just going to kill David. But David, God said, all right. So he went and killed 200. And he broke their foreskins. Now, I know it's disgusting, but this is happening thousands of years ago. The way the armies functioned back then, and they counted the dead. Now, the Egyptian army, what they did during, old times, if they wanted to say how many people they killed, they just chopped the hands off the enemies and brought the hands back. And they cut other stuff that I cannot get into. But then in this case, in David's case, they just took the foreskins. I mean, the Indians, I guess, learned from David. And then there were 200. So the king had to give his daughter up, and she was married to David. Now, the king's daughter is married to David. The king hates David, and he's trying to find ways to kill David. That's his father-in-law. Now, this is where chapter 19 starts. I've got a great relationship with my father-in-law, just in case. Saul, now, finding other ways, because this if jealousy is not treated from within, it's going to spread, and it's like a disease. It's going to affect you, but it's going to affect your family as well, and those whom you love. Saul now urged his servants and his son, Jonathan, to assassinate David. But Jonathan, because of his strong affection for David, told him what his father was planning. Tomorrow morning, he warned David, you must find a hiding place out in the fields. I'll ask my father to go out there with me, and I'll talk to him about you. Then I'll tell you everything I can find out. The next morning, Jonathan spoke with his father about David, saying many good things about him. The king, he's talking to his father, the king must not sin against his servant David, Jonathan said. He's never done anything to harm you. He has always helped you in any way he could. Have you forgotten about the time he risked his life to kill the Philistine giant and how the Lord brought a great victory to all Israel as a result? Why would you murder an innocent man like David? There's no reason for it all. So Saul listened to Jonathan and vowed, as surely as the Lord lives, David will not be killed. Afterward, Jonathan called David and told him what had happened. Then he brought David to Saul, and David served in the court as before. Now war broke out again after that, and David led his troops against the Philistines. He attacked them with such fury that they all ran away. But one day, when Saul was sitting at home with spear in hand, the tormenting spirit from the Lord suddenly came upon him again. As David played his harp, Saul hurled his spear at David, but David dodged out of the way, and leaving the spear stuck in the wall, he fled and escaped into the night. Then Saul sent troops to watch David's house. They were told to kill David when he came out the next morning. But Michal, David's wife, warned him, "If you don't escape tonight, you will be dead by morning." So she helped him climb out through a window, and he fled and escaped. Then she took an idol and put it in his bed, covered it with blankets, and put a cushion of goat's hair at its head. When the troops came to arrest David, she told them he was sick and couldn't get out of bed. But Saul sent the troops back to get David. He ordered, "Bring him to me in his bed so I can kill him." But when they came to carry David out, they discovered that it was only an idol in the bed with a cushion of goat's hair at its head. "Why have you betrayed me like this and let my enemy escape?" Saul demanded of Michal. I had to, Michal replied. He threatened to kill me if I didn't help him. Boy. Now, do you see what's happening in this story? I don't know here's a son, Jonathan, the king's son. He is giving godly advice to his father. It's usually the other way around should be, but sometimes in life, do not ever be surprised when kids grow up more godly than their parents. And then they, in turn, give advice to their family. Now, Jonathan, when he heard his own father wanting to assassinate this that what his father was going to commit was sin. And that's why he goes to his father, he says, why are you going to commit sin? Jonathan wanted what was right in God's sight. So he goes to his father, he says, what you're doing is wrong. You're going to kill an innocent man, and that is sin in the eyes of God. The problem was not that David was his friend, Jonathan's friend. What was at stake was that his father was going to sin against God, and he had to stop God. He had to stop his father. Now, his father promised that, you know, all is good, and he understands what he's saying, and that he's not going to kill David anymore. I wish I could believe that, but, I mean, David believed him, I guess, right? Because he was listening in the field. You remember Jonathan was talking to his father, and then, I mean, David was convinced. Now, this is not the first time he's trying to kill David, but I don't know what possesses David to go back again. Now, I don't know. If I have a spear in my hand and I just throw it at Peter, now, Peter's going to be thinking twice of coming next week if he thinks I'm preaching. And he will say, you know, I don't know, man. And if he shows up, I mean, he will come with a shield just in case. We'll put it under the table and he will be not listening to the sermon. He will be looking at my hands. What's next? You know? But David goes. David goes back and he serves in the palace. Now, and also during that time, we're told that after Jonathan called David and told him what had happened, then he brought David to Saul and David served in the court. War broke out again, and David led his troops against the Philistine. He attacked them with such fury. Now, again, he is leading Saul's armies and winning in style. So he comes back, and David was a very gifted musician. So one day he is in the palace. Now, imagine this. Just picture this. The king is sitting, but he has a spear in his hand. Why would you need a spear sitting in your own living room? Now, imagine, like, with an AR-15 or whatever they are now. You know, like AR-15 or like a machine gun. You're sitting in your living room and you're holding it tight. And there's another guy playing the harp. You know, this is not, you know. So there's a problem. Now, what fascinates me in this story is that. But one day when Saul was sitting at home with spear in hand, the tormenting spirit from the Lord suddenly came upon him. I think the Lord almost wants him to be agitated. And the Lord can send tormenting spirits. Now, you might say, if God is loving and caring, why would he send a tormenting spirit? For the simple reason is that this man is in a position of power and influence. And he was given so many chances to do what was right in God's sight. This man is all about himself. And he's ready to do anything for himself. And later on, he's going to die with his own sword. Now, when the tormenting spirit comes upon him, David was playing the harp. Saul takes the spear and just sends it flying to him. And at that very moment, David just dodges, he says, out of the way, leaving the spear stuck in the wall. The spirit of the Lord was with David from the beginning. David was a warrior. God knew that this was going to happen and David was going to be saved. But see, maybe David was not learning his lesson and he kept going back to Saul. And this was a danger for David if he just kept going back. And he had to be in a situation where he will just move out of an abusive relationship. You know, this was an abusive relationship. People come up with a lot of theological ideas when they are in abusive relationships. They say, we're praying about it. There's nothing to pray when a person is in an abusive relationship. You just walk away. You do not have to pray for the Lord's will to be done. I remember I ministered in the church many, many years ago. There was this lady, young lady, she was coming to church with blue eyes. Not that she had blue eyes, blue face and dark face, and you know, you could see there was abuse. So I used to ask I was younger back then. I used to ask the priest, I used to say, you know, it was an Episcopalian church, who says, you know, she needs a lot of prayers, but she needs the police. She needs to report this. No, we need to pray. We don't want to, or if they've got kids, we don't want to destroy a family. I think this is going to be all sorted out. And he got sorted out. She ended up in the hospital one day, and the police were involved because the neighbors had to call it. But it's interesting that the priest was always the loving type. Again, I say this again, when there is abuse, you don't make this into, you don't turn it into theology. David did not pray what to do. He just fled. Lord, should I stand here in front of the spear? Maybe you should. No, he just moved himself away and ran away. Where does he go? He goes home. A person, an abusive person, does not change unless they really, 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 you know, go through major steps in life. And here you've got the story that she goes, David flees and goes home. Now, he doesn't have children yet. The wife is at home. The wife is the king's daughter. What does Saul do? Then Saul sent troops. This is a government-sanctioned force going to arrest and kill somebody. Then Saul sent troops to watch David's house. They were told to kill David when he came out the next morning. Now, the daughter knows about this. Now, David's wife, she starts becoming very creative. And she says, she warns him, if you don't escape tonight, she tells David, you will be dead by the morning. So she helped him climb out through a window, and he fled and escaped. As I showed you that, I was there, took a picture. And bring him to me, and the troops come. And of course, she's very creative. She puts an idol. Now, you might say, what is an idol doing in David's house? Well, I don't know. You see, let me ask you this, and I've seen this. You know, sometimes Christians talk the talk, but they don't walk the walk. You know how many people tell me that we need to bring prayer back to school? You know, like they're all keen. And I say, all right, do you pray at home? No. I say, why do you want the schools to pray when you are not starting to pray at home? Number two, you know, I've seen a lot of successful men and women who, you know, in their conversation, they say, you know, we've done so well this year, knock on wood. Mm-hmm. Isn't that superstition? And people spend eternity saying, well, I don't know if David was truly a Christian because he left idols at home. For goodness sake, look at yourself before you judge anybody in the Bible. Mm-hmm. The stories are about us. And then my favorite is the evil eye. You know those evil eye, the blue thing with the thing? I just hate it. I just genuinely hate that because there's so much evil. And those who have it in their homes, they're inviting evil to come. And I've done a whole study on that. But people so attached to it. I remember, you know, I've seen kids, you know, being baptized and then affirmed or whatever. Their parents give them a cross and a blue eye next to each other. Superstition. There's a lot of superstition that goes around. But we need to just, we cannot play with superstition. Or a lot of Christians do horoscope, you know. People ask me, what are you? I say, what am I? Oh, you're, what month you're, but December. Oh, you're this. I say, I've got no clue and I don't really want to know. I'm very happy. Don't tell my future. God already knows about it, and I'm very happy with it. But why would I put my trust in mediums and horoscopes and all that when God clearly condemns it in the Bible? And people get offended. I love them, but I have to speak the truth. To what the Bible says, it is just wrong. Now, this woman had idols, and remember who else had idols? She stole it from her parents' house, and then Laban's daughter. Remember Jacob's wife, Rachel, when they ran out of their parents' house? She took the family idols. I mean, these guys got God-worshipping people. And they invited a lot of problems upon their lives. No idols. There should be no idols in not physical or unseen. Sometimes we have idols that we worship more than we worship God. Anyway, it was important to be said, but when the troops came in, This daughter of Saul was very creative. She put an idol in bed and she put some goat's hair. And then when they looked, oh, he was there. But in the morning, when they went to arrest the guy, of course, they discover it's a piece of metal or rock or whatever it is. This idol was made. And the father intervenes and he says, why have you betrayed me like this and let my enemy escape? Saul demanded of Michael. I had to, Michael replied. He threatened to kill me if I didn't help him. Lie. She was lying. David did not threaten to kill her. But do you see what sin does? It just spreads. Now the daughter is lying. Now, let me ask you this. Is lying sin? Yes, it is. Absolutely it is. Did God allow this to happen? Yes, he did. Now, a lot of theologians have, you know, have debated this verse over the years, and it was Thomas Aquinas who said, the Catholic theologian, he said, you know, there are some necessary sins to prevent us from lies that prevents a greater danger. But you lie, and then, now I don't subscribe to this or that. The problem is, it's a very messy place, this side of Jerusalem. The New Jerusalem is great. It's the presence of the Lord, but this side, it gets very messy. Do you know how many people were saved in the Second World War? Many Jews, you know, were saved because, you know, many Germans decided to hide Jews in their homes and lie about it. I mean, stories and stories are written, but there were some Christians who brought a lot of Jews to their home, and when they were investigated, they had to tell the truth. And of course, these, you know, women and men and children were taken. Some were killed, but some escaped. So where do you draw the line? I don't have perfect answers to this. I would not just say this is, a Christian should not lie. And I would not put a full stop there. Yeah, you should not be lying about things. But if it's something about the greater good and protecting life, my approach is I let God give you the wisdom of what you need to do at that very point. Because, you know, creating a theology like this and saying this is exactly what it is, it might be true theologically, but it might not be what needs to happen. Now, it's interesting, later on David talks about this in Psalm 59. And he says God ordained this to happen. Reads Psalm 59 is based on 1 Samuel chapter 19 events. Read it when you go home. I mean, it's the Lord provided me. The Lord protected me. And David's life is spared because of this woman's lie. But why did she lie in the first place? Because Saul originated the environment. He created the environment for all this mess to happen. Do you see, when we do certain things in life and we try to cover that sin, eventually what will happen, if that sin is not going to only affect us, but it's going to affect those whom we love. And you cannot just cover it up. You know, my grandmother used to say, you know, when the snow melts, you will smell it. I mean, we could cover it with snow and more and more and more and more. Eventually, it's just the snow is going to melt, right? And we rather treat what's under the snow before it melts. Now here, David flees. He would never go back to Saul because his life is in danger now. You don't go back to an abusive relationship. You know how many people have made the mistake to go back? Because they were counseled that's the right thing to do it for the children. Huh? Do it for me. Who are you? Because it's going to make them look good. And then David never goes back, and he goes back. You know where he goes back? He goes back to Samuel, the prophet. So David escaped and went to Ramah to see Samuel, because Samuel called him to do this ministry. And he told him all that Saul had done to him. Then Samuel took David with him to live in Naioth. When the report reached Saul that David was at Naioth in Ramah, he sent troops to capture him. But when they arrived and saw Samuel leading a group of prophets who were prophesying, the Spirit of God came upon Saul's men, and they also began to prophesy. When Saul heard what had happened, he sent other troops, but they too prophesied. The same thing happened a third time. Finally, Saul himself went to Ramah and arrived at the great well in Sekou. Where are Samuel and David? He demanded. They are at Naioth in Ramah, someone told him. But on the way to Naioth in Ramah, the Spirit of God came upon Saul, and he too began to prophesy all the way to Naioth. He tore off his clothes and lay naked on the ground all day, all night, prophesying in the presence of Samuel. The people who were watching exclaimed, "What? Is even Samuel a Saul, a prophet?" Now, the verse is not, you know, I've done a Bible study on this, and people ask me, how naked was Saul? I don't know. I didn't take a picture. Did he have some garments on? I don't know. The story is not about Saul's nakedness. The story is about the Spirit of God coming and taking control and protecting David. The story is this. If I'm going to summarize chapter 19. The one that God, whom God calls, always protects. Not even the gates of hell can stop that person from doing the Lord's work. So I want to encourage you today that sometimes in the midst of our walk, Christian walk, there will be a lot of storms, discouragements, and we are human beings. I mean, read some of the Psalms that David writes. You know, boy, you think the world is ending. Yeah, his world was ending, especially when his own son Absalom wants to kill him and take over the kingdom. I mean, imagine your own, you know, loving child goes against you. How, what would you do? You just write a psalm. I mean, you see him very distressed. You know, David's life was not easy. We always talk about David as the king, as the promised king. But he had a rough time to get there, and then he messes things up, and then eventually disappears. But God loved David. He was a man after his own heart. David was a human being, but his heart was there for his Lord. So much so that in one of the Psalms, he says, you know, I have sinned against you. Renew my heart. Renew my soul. Do not take the joy of salvation from me. He was more interested in his relationship with God. The chapter ends with David is safe in the hands of the prophet. Even those troops who come to take over, God sends his spirit, and they are starting praying and praising. You would think they're there to kill David. When you are in the hands of God, God is your shepherd. That's why David can write Psalm 23. Unfortunately, we only use it for funerals. That psalm was not meant for funerals. You know, it's a beautiful, calming psalm. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not be in want. You know, wherever I am, he is my shepherd. In the storms, yes. In weddings, yes. In good times, yes. In bad times, the Lord is my shepherd. And what does a shepherd do? He protects. He keeps protecting his sheep. You know, this whole picture in Psalm 29, in 1 Samuel chapter 19, it's a clear picture of Jesus here. Jesus was, you know, they called him, he was a demon possessed. I mean, they called him all types of names, and eventually they're going to send him to the cross, thinking that's the end of him. But what does he do? He rises from the dead. So my friends, as you read 1 Samuel chapter 19, be encouraged that those whom God calls, God protects as well. And as we, you know, move on to chapter 20 next year, these are powerful stories. And what I love about it is that you've got the good, the bad, and the ugly in it. And it's just very similar to our own lives. And David back then, as he's going through these events, he never thought that he was going to be the king that God was calling him to be. He was just not ready. God was working in his life, changing him, teaching him how to deal with spears of life. If you cannot deal with the spears that are thrown at you, how can you lead others and teach them how to protect themselves from the devil's schemes? We have to go through it in life in order to be strengthened in faith for his glory.